Here's Andy Udman.
Beautiful heritage bird right there. So now what we want to do with this turkey, we basically want to season this up really well, inside and out. We got some Himalayan sea salt here. Coat that up really nice. We're going to put that on the top and bottom. Turn that thing over. Good. We have some salt component in there ready from the sodium from the brining. We still want to add a nice, good amount of seasoned sea salt in there. Put a little black pepper on. Black pepper gives it a nice, brings it to the back of your palate. And we just season the European trained chefs. We just season with salt and pepper. This is what I call my Mediterranean spice. Some nice red herbs on there. Got some paprika, some chipotle.
I was just playing that clip in the newsroom. And Catherine goes, stop. Christmas is until next week. But I want to eat now. That sounds so good. And then she said, who is that guy? I got to hear this. Boy, some great tips about preparing your Christmas turkey. Now, let's. We plan to ambush Pam Colleen, right?
Yeah, I've got
to. Yeah, we're always so nice to her, darn nice to her. This morning I thought, Pam, welcome to the studio.
Thanks, Andy.
Welcome to the show. We have a little Christmas gift. We're not going to wrap it for you. We're going to play it for you. This is person to person with the sentiments of our health minister, Deb Matthews, just for you, Pam Colleen. Here we go.
The most important thing people can do is get the flu shot. That is absolutely the most important thing. It will protect you against H1N1. That's in this year's flu shot.
Can you imagine, Ryan, if we were to buy lunch for Pam and Deb Matthews? Wouldn't you love to be a fly on the wall?
Andy, are you trying to put Pam in a bad mood here? Come on.
Deb Matthews, I'll tell you, there'd be nothing left.
Well, like I've always said before, Andy, these politicians have their backs to the wall. They're listening to industry. They're not listening to alternatives. They're not listening to any other possibilities. They're spending billions and billions of dollars on vaccines. And they're not looking at why our immune systems are breaking down in the first place.
Stop right there, because that's what we're going to talk about in this second and a half hour, folks. We're also going to talk about sleep deprivation, which is a huge issue. And would you believe, and I've been saying this all morning, Pam, listen to who's been listening to Pam Colleen. The L.A. Lakers are now changing the diet of their team to go with animal fat. Yes, the message is getting out. Anyway, that's all in the next half hour. This half hour, just exactly what you heard off the top, turkey. We're going to talk turkey. Tis the season for dining. And, of course, a lot of folks right now preparing that turkey dinner in their minds and getting the appropriate supplies, Pam. And so, Pam, you thought today would be a good day to talk turkey?
Oh, I think so. And I think we should be talking to a controversial chef who does everything opposite from what most chefs and mainstream nutritionists would believe about turkey and animal fat.
Such as
keeping the skin on the turkey, because that's where the nutrition, a lot of the nutrition is, and the flavor.
And the flavor. In fact, he is known as the flavor chef. His name is Lance Roll. Lance, welcome to Canada.
Awesome. Great to be back, guys. Yeah, I love that lead up there. And, you know, the Lakers are probably going to win this year on animal fat. Let me tell you that right now.
Yeah, it's a great story, isn't it? I mean, finally, some professional athletes coming around on this subject.
Yeah, it really is. You know, I've been with the Czech Institute for so long and the Weston A. Price Foundation. You know, it's just simple. God made animals with the fat on them, and we were made to eat them. And the fat is part of the nutritional balance for cell building. You know, you have three components. You have protein, carbohydrates, and fat. And when you take one of the components out, it's just out of balance, you know?
Lance, help me out here. We don't do cooking shows on our show, so it has to be controversial. So let's start with the no-nos of Christmas turkeys. What are the things that many people do that make you cringe when it comes to preparing the bird?
Well, some of the things that make me cringe are definitely when they overcook the bird. And, you know, just too hot an oven and not enough liquid. It turns out dry. Everyone tells me, oh, I got a dry turkey. And, you know, no need to have a dry turkey at Christmas at all.
And what about the gravy? I mean, one thing that makes me cringe is when people try to skim the fat off the gravy. I don't know if that's one of your pet peeves, too.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, the other thing is just trying to buy gravy, you know. Make your own gravy. Even if you don't have a good chicken broth or something to start with, you can just put water in the pan. You guys played that link from the video, you know, and create your own beautiful gravy. Add a few extra necks in there or some wings. in the bottom and make your own beautiful broth, and it's just going to have much better flavor.
And you don't suffer with salt phobia either. A lot of people are suffering with salt phobia still today, and you don't sound like you're afraid of salt at all, which is a good thing.
Yeah, again, salt all in balance. You know, I mean, the salt that we're using now, we use in the Flavor Chef, and you know, there's a really good salt available all around with high nutritional profiles, minerals, and all those kind of things. So, you know, the salt that people are afraid of are the salt that was taken out of the diet, taking all the minerals out of, all the refined salt, and now we're using this beautiful Himalayan sea salt. And
let's we're already at
flavor, you know.
We're already at chapter 3 in the in the turkey cooking book. Let's go back to chapter 1. First paragraph, sure. Chapter 1. Why a turkey? I mean, first of all, the bird is simply ugly.
Andy, you're going to give them a complex.
why did we choose the humble turkey? Well, Lance, just so you know, we just moved to a condo, and I have a lovely little office, and the window is at ground level, and it's in a wooded area, and these wild turkeys come cackling by the house every afternoon, and I get I'm within 3 feet of them, and they are one honking ugly bird for a bird that tastes that good. Why do we now, and why have we for decades had the Christmas as our favorite guest at turkey at Christmas and Thanksgiving?
I think it's just because they're, you know, this is the time of year that they're nice and big and plump, and you know, birds have been eaten forever, and they're just it's a delicious way to do it. It's just tradition, you know. I mean, the whole story of the Mayflower and the Indians and the whole thing, and you know, there they were roasting these wild turkeys they had, and pheasants, and I'm sure other game meats as well. And you know, using all the local bounty that was available to them at the time.
Now, I used to know turkey farmers, and they told me that they won't eat turkey from their factory farm. They own a bunch of factory farms in the Midwest in the United States. They take turkeys, put them outside, and that's the turkey that they eat with their family at Christmas, Easter, Thanksgiving, and so on. They will not eat these factory farm turkeys. Is your preference as well to buy pasture raised turkey?
Oh yeah, whenever possible. At the very least, getting an organic bird that's had time on the free range. I mean, pastured birds are awesome. They're not that easy to find. So at least organic, you're going to get non-GMO. You can easily find those around here at least. And the problem with the factory birds is just like all the other factory birds are stuffed in these pens. They're force fed to eat to get them fat, and they're fed really subpar food. And there's injections of hormones, antibiotics to keep them alive, and it goes on from there.
Lance, let's take it a step further. If you'd prefer not to have a factory bird, you'd prefer to have a pasture-fed bird. Let's take it a step further. Would you prefer the wild bird that's walking by my window every afternoon?
Well, I tell you what, if I could get one, I would probably use it. The thing with a wild bird and even a pastured bird, like I did in the video, is just to make sure that you take the steps to tenderize that meat. Because those animals walking around eating their natural diet are developing muscles that normal factory birds don't develop. So the meat becomes tough. The red blood count is high, so it's much gamier. It's going to be really
Well, it's just a gamey.
It's a make delicious and nice, yeah. and firm, but I mean delicious after all.
Now, some of the questions I get are regarding the brine, that some recipes call for soaking the turkey in brine before you cook it up. Do you recommend doing that? And if so, how do people do that?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, again, I described it on the video as well on the Underground Wellness website. And the brining is pretty simple. You can look it up somewhere. There's a lot of different recipes. I do a simple formula of about half to three quarters of a cup of salt to fresh filtered water, and I don't do much else with the brine because the action of the salt is what's going to penetrate and break down the muscle a little bit. It's going to break down some of the enzymes in there and make that muscle a little more tender. There's brines with acid products in there, and there's brines with flavorings in there, apple cider vinegar and apples and persimmons and cinnamon cloves and things like that. I just prefer to do a simple brine. I like the flavor coming from the pan with the with the vegetables, mushrooms, things like that.
And what about frying? There's people who do deep fried turkey as well. And of course, you wouldn't fry in vegetable oils. So if you did something like that, you would use something like tallow, I would imagine.
Yeah, again, you're talking about a very expensive proposition. even beef tallow from my grass-fed farmers right now, if you go online, you can go to places and find fat being sold online, animal fat, tallow and pork and duck lard. And, you know, that kind of thing would be what you'd want to need. When vegetable oils get to a high temperature, especially like canola and corn oil, first of all, they're just generally genetically modified. Secondly, they become rancid at certain temperatures, and then once they hit that temperature, there's no turning back. So I wouldn't particularly fry a turkey. I never have. It's very dangerous. There's a lot of hot oil, and to me, it's just a bad thing. And if you want to do it, I guess the turkeys come out pretty good, but anything simmered in fat for a long time is going to come out pretty good, you know?
Fresh or frozen?
Fresh all the way, if you can get it. Frozen, again, you're going to lose a little bit of liquid when that bird defrosts. We can take that problem and eliminate it by adding it to a brine the night before, about 24 hours before, 12 to 18 hours before cooking it.
All right. And so what about the fixings? I mean, when people cook their vegetables, they cook their cauliflower, their broccoli and so on. What our ancestors would have done is they would have topped those off with a dollop of butter because the butter contains the fat soluble activators, the activators being things like vitamin A and vitamin D. And those nutrients help us absorb the minerals in the food. So a lot of people who are still butter phobic, fat phobic generally, they may not use the butter on the broccoli or the cauliflower or what have you. But this is not only an important flavor enhancer, like I said, it's going to enhance your mineral uptake as well.
Absolutely. I mean, I just went to the Weston A. Price conference in Atlanta, and, you know, Sally Fallon's basic comment was vegetables were basically a base for butter. You know, bread and grains and things are, again, a base for butter. Butter helps in digestion as well. The fat helps to helps you absorb the minerals, like you just said, and the vitamins in there. And, you know, of course, again, getting some grass-fed organic butter locally if you can. But, you know, if not, there's some good companies out there. We had Kerrygold butter at the conference, and that's from Ireland, but it's a beautiful grass-fed cow. So you get all the vitamin.
We have people that here in Canada that drive across the border into the United States to get that Kerrygold butter. It's delicious.
Now, they won't sell Kerrygold in Canada?
It's hard to find. I don't think it's here. We have some of their cheeses, but I don't think we can get their butter.
It's good butter. I mean, that's just one of the more popular brands that's available. I mean, any butter from Denmark as well. We get this beautiful Lurpak butter sometimes. It's really amazing. That's really good butter.
What's magic? And of course, what's magic about the butter from Denmark?
You know, it's just like anything. It's like a wine, man. It has a certain flavor profile. It's really rich. The grass-fed cows, they take the butter at a certain time of year from when the cows are eating a certain type of grass. So it has a higher CLA count in it. And that's really, you know, it's just delicious. My son eats it like a push-up pop sometimes.
I know I'm going to get calls and email later. What was the name of that butter, and where can you get it?
Well, I'm not sure where you can get it there, but it's called Lurpak.
How do you spell that?
Lurpak. It's from Denmark. I first learned about it on a cruise several years ago from a Holland America ship that only used that butter, and it's delicious, delicious butter.
Now, we have to also talk about, you're the master of bone broths. And so after, we need to talk about post-Christmas dinner and what to do with the carcass. And I know that you have a lot of online education around the importance of bone broths. And so I'd guide people to watch your videos. And you are now selling bone broth to a lot of the stores in California as well. So more and more people are learning about the benefits of bone broth. Let's top it up with why people should be making their own bone broth.
Again, you know, it's one of those things. It's a lost tradition, making bone broth and eating and consuming broth. I mean, before the invention of modern food and food processing, everyone had a stock pot going. Most of the time, good French chefs to this day, well-trained chefs will generally have a stock pot always running. Cooking up bones to make their sauces taste good. And, you know, side benefit, amazing, amazing nutrition. So, yeah, when you're done with that carcass, you know, you take that carcass, put it in a pot with water, Cover add vegetables and simmer it till you have a beautifully flavored stock. If you can add extra bones, even better.
And if you've done all this perfectly, any tips on making a grand entrance with the turkey?
A grand entrance?
Yeah.
Just garnish the turkey up nice. We have a beautiful opportunity to, with the way I do it, you have all these vegetables. We cook the turkey with carrots, celery, onions, garlic, mushrooms, fresh herbs. So you keep some of that stuff around, you layer that around the outside of a platter, set that bird down on the top there, and start cutting.
And, I was thinking, for example, when you walk in with this bird, which you've done all these things, you know, there are people right now who've been scribbling down all these tips are going to go to your website. So they do all the work, they get the turkey, and then they walk in with the turkey. I'm thinking a little music, maybe Pomp and Circumstance, or is there an appropriate tune that you would play that as you walk in with the bird?
I haven't really thought of it that way, but for me, it'd probably be a Grateful Dead song, since I'm a fan. So. I'm a big fan of Grateful Dead, so yeah. I'd probably play a nice little Bertha or something. You know, here comes Bertha.
Well, there we go. We're almost out of time, Lance. Really quickly, the three top no-nos for turkey for cooking your turkey, and then we'll talk about the three absolute musts. What are the three no-nos for cooking your turkey?
Three no-nos. The first one would be, not using vegetables and liquid. I like to braise turkeys. I've always had success making them moist that way. So definitely want to use, that's a yes and a no at the same time. No seasoning. People are afraid of salt. And then no brining. You want to brine your bird the night before and get that moisture to start break down those muscles and really help your bird become moist. So those are yes and no's at the same time. Yes is... And the last, the big no-no is don't overcook your turkey. Get a meat thermometer, instant read thermometer from your local grocer, and make sure that bottom of that breast doesn't get past 165. Because the rest of the turkey is going to be hotter than that, and that middle part of the breast you want at 165, no higher. It's going to carry over a little bit, and that will ensure that you have a moist bird.
Okay, and one question unrelated to turkeys. How do you really celebrate Christmas, come on, without snow?
Without snow?
You're down there in California.
Well, luckily enough for us here, when we want to, and hopefully we'll get a chance, we'll just drive about an hour and a half and get some snow.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah, so we have the beach and the snow at the same time. We just don't have to live with the snow day to day.
We really appreciate you joining us, Lance Roll, the Flavor Chef. Thanks for all the good tips, and Merry Christmas.
Awesome. You too. Thank you so much.
Merry Christmas, Lance. Thank you. And his website.
Merry Christmas.
Yeah, his website is theflavorchef.com, by the way.
That simple. Theflavorchef.com.
Theflavorchef.com. And he's got a YouTube station as well. So if you want to see some of his online instruction, you can go to his YouTube station.
Terrific. In our second half hour with Pam Colleen, we're going to talk about Deb Matthews. Ryan, if we could. What was it, Ryan, that. What was it that Deb Matthews said to Pam Colleen that is going to start our conversation, if you would?
The most important thing people can do is get the flu shot. That is absolutely the most important thing. It will protect you against H1N1. That's in this year's flu shot.
Pam, stop banging your forehead against the wall. We're going to talk about what Deb Matthews said. We're going to talk about sleep deprivation and this amazing story of the LA Lakers adopting...
They're eating bone broth.
Bone broth.
Yeah, their knees are getting stronger. Can you imagine?
Animal fats.
Yes.
Instead of, and I was shocked.
Yeah, one of the players was eating the equivalency of 24 candy bars a day.
I heard that. I wrote that down. 24 candy bars a day. They've been listening. They're adopting Pam's diet. We'll talk about all those issues. The phone lines are open. We'll talk about them all right after this, right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK.
The most important thing people can do is get the flu shot. That is absolutely the most important thing. It will protect you against H1N1. That's in this year's flu shot.
That's my little Christmas present to Pam Colleen. Pam, the flu shot, get it or you'll die. is how a lot of people are going to hear. This comes, after all, from not the Pope, but his second in command, Deb Matthews, the health minister for the province of Ontario. She is number two. She is a deputy premier. And here she is saying, basically, get the flu shot or risk nasty things happening.
Well, it's, you know, it's a shame that people aren't saying, what about your intake of sugar? What about your intake of processed foods? You know, are you eating enough animal fat in the diet? Because animal fat is crucial in terms of supporting your immune system. So if we could just return to common sense and see people boost their immune systems through natural nutritional methods, then we wouldn't have to waste billions of dollars on vaccines. And I don't hear anybody in command telling people, oh, by the way, maybe you're eating too much sugar, maybe you're eating too much processed food. And that's really the route we should be going if we want to stop this province from going bankrupt.
I want to play you the full report, and we thank our friends at CTV. It's 2 minutes long, but the flu right now is a major concern, and especially the H1N1 flu. So, Ryan, if we could, let's play the full report and just listen to it. We'll take notes. Folks, this is an issue that we're all wrestling with, what to do about being exposed to the danger of the flu. And it takes a leap of faith if you haven't been exposed to what Pam has been saying for a considerable length of time to just say, okay, I'm not going to get the flu shot. I made that decision a long time ago. I haven't had a vaccine of any kind for decades, and I'm still standing 6'3" and hale and hearty. And I think, Ryan, would you not agree, one of the best attendance records this radio station of anybody? Now, Steve Garrison, on the other hand, has had the flu shot, but there's some other reasons there we won't get into. I expect him to go down any day now, but we'll see. Anyway, let's hear the CTV report on the flu shot, and then we'll talk.
In just a bit, Tara.
Thank you very much, Julie. It's a strain of the flu that brings back memories of a pandemic, H1N1. The most recent influenza report by the Middlesex London Health Unit included some unsettling results. Talia Ricci joins us live with more. Talia.
Well, Tara, since September 1st, 12 cases of influenza have been reported. And of those 12, 8 of them have been subtyped as H1N1. Now, this is the same strain that was circulating back in 2009. Runny noses and days off work are typical around this time of year. As flu season continues, the latest reports indicated that H1N1 is the predominant strain that is circulating in Middlesex, London.
As expected, we've seen a couple more lab-confirmed cases come in. We're keeping an eye on the situation. It's very normal for this time of year.
Back in 2009, the H1N1 pandemic caused over 400 deaths in Canada. But staff at the Middlesex London Health Unit are not concerned that an extreme case like this will happen again.
Flu seasons are very unpredictable, and they need to be, you know, looked at a case-by-case basis, year-by-year basis, right? So it's very difficult to predict what's going to happen one year to the next. We're not more concerned this year than we would be any other.
Since September 1st, there have been 6 hospitalizations, but no deaths related to H1N1.
The most important thing people can do is get the flu shot. That is absolutely the most important thing. It will protect you against H1N1. That's in this year's flu shot.
This recent news has convinced some Londoners to get their flu shot, but others don't see it as necessary.
Yes, I have got my flu shot this season because I work with people who are vulnerable.
The doctor recommended it and said that the way with all the stuff that's around nowadays, might as well.
I just never get it any year. I never seem to get the flu anyways.
And the health unit wanted to take this opportunity to remind Londoners to wash your hands frequently and cover your mouth when you're coughing and sneezing. Tara?
Solid advice. Thank you very much, Talia.
Okay. Tara's little comment there. Solid advice. I mean, how much of that advice was good and how much of it wasn't?
Well, wash your hands, cover your mouth when you're sneezing. I mean, that's good advice. We know that those things work to help minimize the spread of the flu. But to look to the vaccine as the answer, I think, is wishful thinking.
Bottom line,
especially from a company that has a criminal record. I can't imagine people looking at a company, looking at their rap sheet and thinking,
you're talking about GlaxoSmithKline
and other pharmaceutical companies. They have terrible, terrible track records in terms of their integrity. They don't have integrity. It's been proven in the courts. And so every time you look to a product produced by GlaxoSmithKline, you have to say to yourself, would I trust this company? And you know that expression, Andy, you know, fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me. Yeah. This is the kind of wishful thinking people are putting into, you know, this is the blind faith, essentially, that they're putting into a company like GlaxoSmithKline. How could anybody trust their products based on their track record? It's craziness to me.
Okay, we're going to move on to the second issue. If you want to join in the conversation, feel free, 463-1290. But I want to move on to another issue, and that is sleep deprivation. Tim Hortons could build a shop in the desert and there'd be a lineup. I mean, look at any Tim Hortons shop in this city on any, even on Saturday morning, mm-hmm. 10 o'clock, you can't get a seat at Tim Hortons coffee shop. Why is that? Because the coffee is so darn good? Because there's so much sugar packed into those donuts? Mm. Or because?
People are exhausted and they need a stimulant to get through the day. You know, whether the stimulant's coffee, sugar, donuts. I mean, these things are stimulating to the nervous system. So people use these drugs, and make no mistake, they're all drugs, everything I just mentioned. And so that they get a stimulant effect and it carries them through the day. The trouble is, of course, as they stimulate their nervous system, as they stimulate essentially their body's batteries, which are known as the adrenal glands, as they stimulate the adrenal glands, they weaken them at the same time. That is the vicious cycle of addiction. So as you turn to a stimulant to give yourself energy, you actually rob your body of energy at the same time. So you can't escape the stimulants that you're gravitating towards.
But people would say, Pam, I can't get through a day if I don't have my morning jolt of Java.
That's right. And then at night, by the time you go to bed at night, your body's pushing out so much adrenaline, you can't have a good night's sleep. You wake up exhausted. That's the sign of withdrawal from the caffeine. Or sugar, or both, right? So it's really, it's about taking care of the adrenal glands. That's what we want. That's what we need to do. Historically, right, we didn't eat a lot of sugar. You know, in the 1700s, we ate maybe 4 pounds of sugar per year. If we sat down to have a cup of coffee, which was new at the time in the 1700s, we probably would have had a little tass of coffee, a tiny little cup, and we probably didn't drink much more than maybe a cup a day. So we didn't expose ourselves to too many stimulants back in the 1800s. It was really at the rise of the Industrial Revolution when our diets changed and we started eating more foods like flour and sugar and more coffee. So we are exposed, we're overexposed to too many stimulants. And at the same time as it gives us energy, it takes our energy away. So people have this feeling inside today, Andy. It's basically something I call wired and tired. People feel wired and tired at the same time. And so we're seeing this sleep issue get worse and worse and worse. In fact, this study that just was announced this morning on CBC, they're talking about most Canadians would rather get a good night's sleep than to go out to party. They just are exhausted today. They wake up exhausted. I think the report also says something like 25% of people go to work every day exhausted. I mean, I know what that feels like because I collapsed with chronic fatigue back in the 1980s. I was in that first wave of people who were collapsing with things like chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia back in the 1980s. And my diet growing up as a child was abysmal. I mean, I was weaned on things like skim milk and boxed cereals and lots of even things like peanut butter and banana sandwiches, peanut butter and sugar, Kraft dinner, wieners and beans. I mean, I was raised on highly, highly processed foods. So it's no wonder by the time I hit my early 20s, I collapsed with chronic fatigue. And that was, you know, I was raised in the 60s. Now it's even worse today in terms of kids and their exposures to all of these newfangled foods that really don't carry a lot of nutrition. And if anything, they carry a lot of adverse effects on the body.
And folks, this is not just a double whammy, but we have a triple treat for you. And that is this incredible story of the LA Lakers switching their diet to basically what Pam Colleen has been advising all along, animal fats. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, I want to play you a little report from CBS Sports. Who would have thought we'd run a report from CBS Sports on News Talk 1290 London today? We're going to do that in just a moment. It's an amazing story when it connects the LA Lakers, the likes of Kobe Bryant and Dwight Howard. And what was that clip of the one guy eating what?
Yeah, this was Dwight Howard, who has shifted over. He's just made a switch to Houston, apparently. So he's hopefully going to have a positive influence on that team as well. But he was eating about 24 candy bars a day in terms of the intake of carbohydrate in his diet.
But he's young and strong and thinks he's invincible. We'll be back with that incredible story in just a moment right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK. Anyway, we're in conversation in our health segment with Pam Colleen. Incredible story, Pam. Wow. Take a bow. It's not like you invented this animal fat. Obviously, Weston A. Price has been your hero for so long. But to hear that the mighty LA Lakers, Kobe Bryant and company.
Steve Nash.
Yeah. Now buying into the animal fat.
Yeah, they're buying grass-fed beef, and they're eating grass-fed beef jerky, and they're eating lacto-fermented foods and bone broth and liver pate.
See, people are saying, oh, yeah. Yeah, right, Pam Colleen. Well, let's hear it from CBS Sports. Here we go.
Welcome to CBSSports.com. I'm Erin Shironi here to talk about one of my favorite subjects, nutrition, specifically the state of sports nutrition in the pros. And here to talk about it with me is NBA insider Ken Berger, who apparently is as passionate as I am about this subject. Ken, you wrote an incredible three-part series on nutrition in the NBA. I love it. I encourage everybody to read it. Really great stuff. What inspired you to do this, aside from the fact that you're interested in it yourself?
Well, that was a big part of it, Erin. I mean, I heard early this season that the Lakers, several players and their strength coach, had purchased a 400-pound grass-fed cow from a butcher in San Diego. And while everyone else was scratching their heads, I said, well, that makes perfect sense. I know people who have done that. And I've tried a paleo diet in the past. I've tinkered with some of this stuff. I've had good results with it. I've become, you know, in layman's terms, fairly knowledgeable about it. It's stuff that interests me. And I guess that's the genesis of any story any journalist does, right? If it interests you and it grabs you and you're passionate about it, you'll kind of get led down the path and explore it further. And that's kind of how it started for me.
Sure. And like I said, I encourage everybody to read the series, because there's a lot of really interesting discoveries that you made. But we'll talk about some of them now. Let's get started with the thing that I think surprised most lay people, shall we say, because most people are not experts in the paleo diet. Dwight Howard, who looks, you know, called himself Superman, regardless of, you know, how much his body fat percentage has gone up by a point or two, looks quite in shape, but was addicted to sugar, like many people and many of the guys in the NBA, as you discovered, was eating the equivalent of 24 Hershey bars a day, sugar-wise, which anyone knows is not a good idea. Yet he still looked the part, but his blood numbers weren't good. He had glucose issues, insulin, wasn't performing as well. Same thing with Derrick Rose, right? He's a self-professed candy head, as you discovered. Someone sent him a Skittles machine when he was younger. I feel like a lot of these guys kind of joke around about loving sugar and eating a lot of sugar, and, you know, they burn it off. But what people tend not to realize is that just because you might look good or look ripped on the outside doesn't mean you're healthy on the inside. It doesn't mean that you can play as well as you should be.
No, that's true, Erin. And Dwight always has looked the part, but what he found was that he was not feeling the part.
Right.
And he was not playing the part last year with the Lakers. You know, he had obviously been coming off back surgery. That was a big issue for him. But as the Lakers got connected with a doctor in the Napa Valley, Dr. Kate Shanahan, who's done a lot of research on nutrition and how it affects your genetics and how you should be eating for optimal health, they sat him down and took his blood test and found out his glucose numbers were way out of whack for a 27-year-old athlete in the prime of his career. And it was a scary moment for Dwight. And to his credit, he took that information to heart. He did his homework. He looked into all of these aspects of eating and dieting and putting himself in position to be successful on the court.
Okay, we're getting the message of the L.A. Lakers turning to animal fats. I mean, Pam, take a bow. This is incredible to see, because let's face it, if they start to get good results, the message is going to get
Well, they're already getting good results. They're already saying that they are experiencing fewer aches and pains, and they're just feeling more energy, more vitality. I mean, they're just feeling better overall, those in the NBA who are adopting their ancestral diet.
And our own Steve Nash is drinking the Kool-Aid, shall we say. Not doesn't really apply, but he's bought into the message.
That's right. That's right.
In fact, I'm reading a quote here. Believes the infusion of healthy fats and oils helped him recover from a broken leg last season, and he's holding out hope for any edge that he can find as he tries to overcome residual nerve damage from that injury. So that's incredible.
Yes, and Dr. Kate Shanahan is a medical doctor, and she studied biochemistry at Cornell University. And what happened with her is she started noticing that in her own family that the older relatives that she had were healthier than the younger. And she started asking what was going on, because, of course, the older relatives she had hadn't really strayed from their ancestral diet. They were eating the traditional foods and hadn't brought into their diet the newfangled foods. And yet they were healthier than their younger relatives. And so she started noticing this transformation in our food supply, even in terms of the health of their own family members. And so she's a board-certified medical doctor. She's the author of a book called Deep Nutrition. I've tried to get her on the show, but she's so busy. I do have her book listed in my books page on my website, which is just my name, pamkaleen.com.
Terrific. We're almost out of time. For those who missed the information in the first half hour, we had Lance Roll, the flavor chef, if people want to find out more information about him.
It's theflavorchef.com. And you can go to his YouTube station as well to get instruction on how to cook your turkey.
Terrific. Mm-hmm. Pam Klein, always a pleasure. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you. And I guess I'll see you in the new year.
In the new year, 2014.
Absolutely. Have a good one.
Okay, in our next hour.